are back. Last night I was at Laugh Factory. Told y'all to pop out after Samir's show. Chose not to. You went home, and then I you went told to wife me you had a terrible night, which you deserve.
Like, it's like, come on, guys.
Come on, guys.
You get what you deserve. You get what you deserve.
Not the best night after our show.
You guys had a good show, though.
We had a good show. The show was always good. And then after that, we were like, should we go to Lab or should we go to Lincoln Lodge? Mm-hmm. And then my girl's like, we should go to Lab. I was like, nah, we're going to go to Lincoln Lodge where all the comics are there. And then we go there, it's like Latinos night. Mm-hmm. I'm like, ain't no comic is here except all Latinos. So I was like, shit, we should have got the Laugh Factory. We should have gotten the Laugh.
Which is not a bad thing. It's just you're not getting on stage.
I'm not.
Samir looks around.
I'm not talking to anyone. Everyone's so busy.
Samir's like, look, I can deal with the black folks, the Arabs, but this is a whole nother minority. What do I get in? What do I fit in this one?
Yeah. I was like, I'm gonna call it a night. I'm gonna go home.
But guys, we had a good trip to L.A.
Yeah, that was
coming
fun.
Off that.
That's right. Yeah,
that coming off that.
And we have that episode ready to go.
Ready to go. But this one that we're about to get into, this is our first episode for season two, right? This is our launch.
This is coming out not too long after we record. This is going to be out there because we're talking about. We mainly want to hit on something that's kind of circulating in the news now, and we're exercising more so. Making sure we're feeding the people a little bit more often. So we have our regularly scheduled shows that we got coming up with interviews, deep dives with some interesting professors as well as comedians of high caliber. And then also we're going to be popping in occasionally.
Doing current topics.
Topics.
My mom, I don't know if she heard the Charlie Kirk episode or not, but she called me, she said, Seper June. I know podcasts, you're doing comedy now. Don't talk about. We're temporary here. Don't talk about Charlie. Watch what you say.
Watch
what you say. But no, I think we kept it. I think we kept it pretty civil. But I'm excited because today we got a special host, a close friend of the podcast, someone I had a chance to see for the first time, but I've been hearing about him
exploding on the comedy scene.
But I've been hearing about him through you guys for months and months and months. Close friend of you guys. Saw him at your show, Samir, at Second City. Mm-hmm. You guys want to introduce the guest of honor?
Yes. So he's not shy to any controversial. All over the country right now. So I'm excited to see where he's going. I had the honor to do a few shows with him. I think early on Chicago, a couple of the first two shows I ever did was with him. Mm-hmm. You know, from one alpha male to another. I can't wait to introduce this.
He's going hard on this alpha.
You know, they call me alpha, but they call them alphas of alphas. That's what they
You're
call
the alphas. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, Mike, you want to say anything, or should we just?
You took the words out of my mouth. He's a solid dude. I call him GQ. We'll explain that when he gets on here, man. But he really needs no introduction. Yeah. Like I said, he's exploding on the scene right now. So without further ado, one round of applause for the one and only Zaid.
Bow, 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 bow. What's happening, Fozy?
And we should explain. So welcome to PCWB season two. Good to see everybody.
Co-host Mike Knight.
Co-host Samir Abdul.
Co-host Saper Vakil. And it's like early in the morning right now. We have our coffees. We're at Northwestern. We're in Annenberg Hall, in the School of Education and Social Policy. No one's here. We got in first things. There's a black man.
No, your wife got in.
My wife.
Your card didn't work.
My card didn't work. Let's not bring that up.
He was downstairs trying to tap his card. Man, he was like, I wonder if my wife said, bing, bong, welcome.
It's true. And leave it up to us, man. We come in. No one's in the building. Mm-hmm. Right? You got it. We got an Iranian guy, an Arab guest. And the first thing we do, don't even ask what we've been talking about. We haven't even had our first sip of coffee, and we're already deep into race relations.
Yeah.
We're into genocide. We're all
world hunger.
Is this what we do? Is this how we live?
This is the one.
This is what our people.
Before we actually even get too far in it, I want to shout out because currently, right now, one of your co-hosts, Samir Abdul, is going viral for a clip that he did.
Oh my God, we got to talk about this.
For a national viral clip that came from Chicago. Talk about it.
This is hilarious.
I don't even know if it was ever confirmed that this gentleman was an immigrant because he got away so smooth.
Yeah,
buddy
yeah.
on the bike.
Dude.
And then Samir did a clip about it and it's going bananas.
Really?
And yeah.
Look.
I think it's like very micro vibe. It's like 130.
That's good.
Yeah, very micro. Look,
this is my indicator of how Samir is going viral. Okay. My mom, who's still trying to figure out how to use Instagram, who still sends a message to the family chat, but she thinks she doesn't know how it works. I don't know how it works. I'm not calling my mom out. Mom, I love you if you're watching. My mom posted Samir's reel to her story. I've never seen her post anything to her story. And then she called me about it. And she said, "Your friend Samir, he's so funny."
Yeah, that's amazing.
Nah, that dude is amazing. And how does that... Because everybody in here is tied to, immigrant families, the mentality, the culture. Mm. When you're seeing that, is this guy like are you guys pulling from like, yeah.
Yeah.
No, dude, he's a damn hero.
Yeah.
And it's funny is I feel like that's such a Chicago thing that he did too. That like an F you kind of get out of my city vibe. I'm going to troll you. Mm-hmm. That felt like a CPS moment.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm going to troll you and I'm going to get on a bike.
And then got on a divvy.
Got on a divvy. And he's on a divvy?
Yeah,
he was running next to it.
He was so smooth. He had that down pat. Like he had the play in his head. Like
he was practicing.
And was gone. Was out of there.
And also when he left, he looked back at them. Like, that's what you thought. And just... kept on going, never just,
yeah,
which is man. Like
just I'm fucking whacker, dude.
No, it felt like a Deadpool moment for me. Mm-hmm. Seeing that, like it felt like finally someone stood up to them or embarrassed them, because that's what it felt like. But I can't hope, because the next day, the whole Trump situation with the general leaders, where what's his name, the defense secretary speaking on behalf. He was saying one of the standards now is that we have to be in shape. We look embarrassed, and I was like, did he saw what's happening with like ICE?
That's
and
funny.
Like, is that what this is inspired? Because he was saying, you guys are fat. You guys have to do push-ups,
right? Yeah,
and I was like, it was like 2 days after the news went out, and I'm sure they didn't see anything about Chicago. But I'm like, you can see most of the ICE agents are these out of shape characters. So they're like, we got to be in shape. This is not how we, this is a bad look for us. And I'm like, no, you're bad look for us. So it was like, I don't know if that was inspired.
This is what happens when you come to Chicago. Where were they before this? Like what? Like they were in Dallas.
So what's crazy is I had a show 2 weeks ago and I grew up, I was a military kid. So I grew up all around the world. I have a Filipino friend of mine, a buddy from high school. This is back in the 90s, bro. Mm. And I had actually saw him when I joined the military. I was stationed in California. I bumped into him in California. It's just a dude that don't keep in touch. We're Facebook in touch, right? Every now and then. And then so he comes to my show. It's out of town. It's in McHenry. And when I see him, bro, hey, man, thank you so much for coming out. Hey, what are you doing in town? I'm in here for work. Oh, that's what's up. Ooh, ooh, ooh. So we're sitting there, we're talking. And then, I haven't seen this dude in over 10, 15, 20 years. Mm. And I'm talking to him, and I'm like, wait a minute, bro. I was like, the last time I talked to you, do I remember, were you like working like for Border Patrol or something like that? And he was like, yeah, actually, I still am. That's what I'm doing in town. I was like, are you kidding me? Get out of here. And he was like, yeah, actually. And then, next, I'm going to be here until like mid-October. Then we're off to like Arizona or wherever we're going. And I'm like, all right, man, well... take life.
I love that they're on tour. He's like letting you know that's like I'm here and I'm gonna be in Arizona. Then we're gonna go down to Memphis.
Here's the crazy part, Zaid. So the next morning, or the day of Buddy on the Bike, I open up my Facebook. It's a regular day, and I guess since I just interacted with him, he's like in the front of my stories, right? And so I see him. He's on the news. I don't know if you were paying attention, but there was dude, like they made him the highlight. He had on a cowboy hat and sunglasses.
Oh my God.
That's my guy. Filipino, he is, heritage wise, right? And then I'm reading this. Here's the one thing that kind of caught me off guard. He put in the caption of his story because he was there for Bike on the Buddy. Mm-hmm. And he has like the first person perspective Because he has, like, on his body stuff. So it's a trip watching his story. And then he puts on, yeah, we tried to hop behind the bus so we could hop out on Buddy, but he was too quick. He dusted all of us.
That's wild. That's wild.
I was like, yo, even they're giving up.
That's respect.
But I text him. I was honesty. Like, that's crazy. You've been, like, after I saw his story, I was like, you've been in Chicago for a week and you're more famous in the city than I am. That's crazy. I'm like, wow. What are you up to? And he texts me. It's just super busy. We're doing this, that, and the third. And later on tonight, we're heading down to South Shore. We're going to do a raid on Tren de Agua, Venezuelan folks, in some boo, 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 boo. I'm like, all right, man.
Look. We talked about, before we started running the cameras, right? And not to go on to a whole tangent on Trump and race relations, but one of the big farces that has been revealed with the election of Trump is that there is like this very clean divide between white folks and then so-called people of color on this side, as if there is like as if the politics can be easily carved up like that. And it can't. We talked about racism within the Arab and Iranian community towards black folks. That's something that there's a lot of research on that, by the way. Yeah. Filipino, I have, you know, great Filipino friends, like you hang out with their families, there's conservative values there.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on in America. So it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's not altogether surprising. And you know, but I mean, he's a younger dude, so it's a little bit surprising, but that's here, man.
That's a valid point.
There's a ton of young Arabs I've seen that are still pulling for Trump. They'll text me like, you know, there was the ceasefire agreed to yesterday, the Hamas agreed to release the hostages in exchange for his and it was brokered by Trump, and I get texts and DMs. See, look what he's doing.
Me too.
And I'm like,
really? Wow.
Me too.
I'm like, dude, okay, broken clock. Wow. Right, but like, look at everything. Also, look how long the genocide's been going on since he became into power. Right,
man.
He
could have ended it there. Parallel experience.
Right? Look at everything he said about buying Gaza and all this shit. Like,
crazy.
What you're saying is so correct in the sense that there is not a clear divide, and I'm not exactly sure why. I'm not exactly sure how we're still falling for this. How we're still, you know.
Do you guys think the longer this goes, do you guys think the more muddy it becomes and more confusing? Or do you think it becomes more clear on, like, you know, maybe it becomes more clear on what Trump is going to be doing or what he's going to do? Or is it going to just be more, even now we're confused because there's like half of us, and maybe he is helping us to some degree. Maybe he's not helping us. Is it going to be confusing, you think?
I think it's just going to get way more confusing and more muddy. I don't think whatever Trump's plans were, I don't think he knows how to execute them, and I don't think they all make sense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at, like, the dozing of the government workers, right? Like, they cut how many jobs? It's like
a couple hundred thousand jobs,
right?
But and then Elon got right up out of there.
Yeah.
Right. But they are rehiring people for those jobs.
Mm.
Like, while they're firing people, they're reallocating those jobs to other departments and hiring people for them somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're saving money as a country, right? If anything, we're paying double for some of these jobs because you have to pay these people their leave.
Yeah. Mm.
But it's all just about being able to report, hey, we cut $500,000 jobs. Look what we did. So again, my point in going on this tangent is that I don't think Trump actually knows what he's doing, and I don't think he has the right people in place. And the longer this goes on, we are 9 months into this.
I've heard it all. Like, so I don't have faith in people being like, oh, okay, there's going to be a convergence. Like, again, I don't want to all the way derail us, but like earlier in the summer, we saw, you know, not only the what's going on in Gaza, all of a sudden Iran gets in the mix, right? Okay, this is a moment where Iranians should come together. Nope. A lot of Iranians were like, damn right, Trump is our president, throw them missiles. My brain is like, I can't even process that. It's like, that's gonna liberate. And so I'm like, wow. It gets crazy fast. I don't think we can get there, but let's turn the tables on ourselves for a minute, right? And to talk about comedy, sometimes we do this, we kind of pivot towards the concept we're doing here, PCWB, something that I've seen in Samir and Mike, and I think is core to our friendship, and definitely I saw it in your act, and I know it's true in your comedy, is you guys are truth tellers, right? You guys are a brand of comedy that's trying to make sense out of reality in a way that's personal, mm-hmm. right? In a way that's grounded in your own experience. Mm-hmm. But at least in my read, is in the search of truth, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of my, as someone who's on the university side and an observer, that's, I look at comedy as an amazing art form that has this deep responsibility,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. acts on it. And, you know, in the daytime, I'm up in the classrooms and the research labs, mm-hmm. and if I can get out the house, I come catch Mike or Samir mm-hmm. and all your, you know, comedy friends, grabbing microphones and telling stories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I'll admit, I say all that as a preface to be like, I'm hurt about what the fuck happened in Riyadh Comedy Festival. I had a few days to process
Talk
it.
Talk about it.
I had a few days to process it. And it could be that the fault is on me. Maybe I have, you know, they always say don't look too closely at your heroes, right? Mm-hmm. Don't even, maybe the comedy is an art form. Maybe I'm expecting too much from it, right? Maybe I need to just remember everyone is just trying to get by. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like if we're going to look at comedy as an art form that is in the business of speaking truth to power, mm-hmm. and we have some of the cast of characters who went to this mm-hmm. festival, Dave Chappelle, Bill Burr. I'm going to just name the ones that I'm like, oh, what? Dave Chappelle, Bill Burr, Aziz Ansari, Maz Jobrani, mm-hmm. right? Oh, yeah, yeah. These are Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
But the first four, like, these are people I admire.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, you guys they're not perfect, mm-hmm. but what the fuck? Am I like? How are you guys seeing this shit?
So I'm actually a little surprised. This is gonna be an interesting podcast. I completely disagree with you.
I had a feeling. I had a feeling 100% y'all would.
100% disagree.
With no, I went this morning. When I left the house with my babe. I think I'm gonna be 1-3, and I want to hear.
Yeah, and we'll have discussion. Like I don't think your take is, because from what I know about you and I know where that take is coming from. I completely so zooming out. You know, there's just been so much controversy around the Riyadh Comedy Festival, mm-hmm. and there's been people who accepted to go and then didn't. I think it's important to note the Riyadh Comedy Festival was sponsored by the royal family in mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. and all these comics are taking money from the royal family of Saudi Arabia to go perform there. Mm-hmm. And so the controversy, I'm just doing this to set the...
No, that's great.
Yeah, of course.
And so the controversy is, you know, there's limits to what you can say in Saudi Arabia mm-hmm. about the government, about what's happening across the world, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so these comics likely had to tailor their content to this type of festival mm-hmm. in exchange for what can probably be imagined as an insane bag of money.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so there are comics now in the States who either got invited to go to Riyadh and turn it down or didn't get invited to go to Riyadh and are making a big fuss about people taking money to go perform. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. So... what I will say, first and foremost, I put this on Facebook yesterday and I stand by this 110%, is I'm seeing a lot of comics, and you are not falling into this, so I'm not, that's not an accusation. There is a group of comics out there who have been silent about Palestine, who have been silent about genocide for 3 years, who are silent on social issues, who happily take money to go perform at Zionist clubs and Zionist shows here in Chicago. And are saying, how dare you go take money from the royal family to go perform? Those people, their opinions don't even matter because your moral compass is so fucked up that you have withdrawn yourself from legitimacy when it comes to speaking on social issues. Mm. You are willing to sacrifice your morality for a paycheck, a much smaller paycheck. And like for those people, I don't think they have a right to speak up. Also, anybody who is not... who is not intelligent about where they spend their money, right? To making sure that when they spend their money, they're not going to Zionist own industries and things like that. Those people, delete it. You don't. Your opinion doesn't matter. Now, people like you and other comics like Shane Gillis, Gianmarco, these guys have been very outspoken in favor of Palestine.
Or Nimesh Patel.
Nimesh Patel, yeah. Very outspoken about the Palestinian liberation and also other ongoing genocides and social issues. And for them to take the stance of, if I can't speak truth to power in the way that I see fit and the way that works for me, I will not then go take money from Saudi Arabia. those people, I hear you. Mm-hmm. I get it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where my point comes in is, one, I think there's a lot of mischaracterization about Saudi Arabia out there. And look, I'm not paid by the royal family. I'm not
sure. Sure.
But I think I think in this country especially, we look at Gulf countries, we look at Arab Gulf countries, and we cast these large stones from a glass house about what oppression looks like and what censorship looks like and what evil looks like. And I get really frustrated with that because it's so easy that, I think there's a race tone to it because they're Arabs, they're not white, so what they do has to be even more evil. And two, I think it's just an arrogance that we have in this country to say, like, you know, that place is so evil. And I was in a green room this week and someone was like, women can't even show their mouths there. It's like, nah, they can. You're dumb. You're ignorant. So I think there is legitimate criticisms for the government of Saudi Arabia and for a comedy festival funded by their money. But I think I am not hearing a lot of those legitimate concerns. I'm hearing the racist, low hanging fruit, ignorant shit that people are not educated enough to speak on. And that's where I start finding really a lot of frustration. I've been talking for a long time, so I'm going to summarize my point on this is my faith in humanity after what's happened in Palestine is severely shaken. Mm. And so speaking truth to power.
Like all bets are off in a sense.
All bets are off. Go get your bag. You know what I'm saying?
I want to hear what you have to say, but just want to layer on, and I know I get the complexities of, you know, from the West, especially white folks, especially people who haven't been showing support for other issues, critiquing, you know, Islamic countries. I get the gray area or the moral ambiguity that causes when it comes to Iran. Same thing, right? Oftentimes, if it's a Republican person, conservative white person in America who all of a sudden seems really concerned about the human rights abuses of Iran and is speaking out, it puts me in a weird position because Iran does have, yes, they're an Islamic Republic, they do have terrible corruption, human rights violations, and they're illegitimate by their own people. But who's making that critique and in what context and for what purposes? So I hear that there's some similar dynamics going on. But the one thing I would layer on that makes me also cringe a little bit about the politics here is that one of the biggest hypocrisies of the United States in its geopolitics is its historic alliance with Saudi Arabia, right? It's one of the points that I go to when I'm having debates about the legitimacy and the moral positioning of America. Yes, of course, in its support of Israel and the ongoing genocide in Gaza, but also its alliance with Saudi Arabia has been a huge, you know, moral red flag and political misstep, and so the fact that now you have people who I would consider in the category of truth tellers accepting the bag weakens the argument of those of us who are critics of U.S. imperialism and militarism. It's like, yo, don't you love Bill Burr and Chappelle, like, they're hanging with the Saudis. It's like there's something about there that gets complicated to me because I'm like, man, one of the biggest hypocrisies of America is its relationship with the regime of Saudi Arabia. And not to double down on the tropes, right, and the racialized comments that happen, they're not a clean government, right? They do have blood on their hands. They do a lot of human rights abuses. There is oppression towards women. And I think we can be sophisticated enough in our thinking to be like, you know what, we don't have, the U.S. doesn't have the moral high ground, and we can call out the Islamic Republic of Iran or Saudi or whomever and not worry about, oh, is that making me in the cahoots with this other group or this other group. Anyway,
sure. I think both of you have excellent points, and you follow me around long enough, I'll turn into a hypocrite in front of your eyes, right? I'm not going to speak for everybody else.
I think that's a human condition.
But. Sure, but when it comes down to it, right, there's a lot of focus, and everything's perspective, but there's a lot of focus on the bag. Now, out of the four people that you named, Burr, Chappelle, you know, Kev, the rest of those cats, do they need the reported 1.8 million or the six figures or whatever? I highly doubt it. First and foremost, the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, is he just cutting these guys at 1.8? If I'm your agent, Dave Chappelle, we're reporting the 1.8 bag that we're getting in tax-free Saudi Arabia. We'll get the other 3.2 on the back end, nice and quiet. I'll give it to you in Bitcoin or ETH or whatever like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For the people that think Elon Musk is the richest person in the world, on paper, things look crazy, and we're not getting the full news. So it's not the money at all. None of those four cats and a lot of those people didn't need the money to take that trip over there to do what they were doing. It's, in my eyes, right, it's more so not what you get, but who you get it from.
Yeah.
Right? It's who you're shaking hands with. Because Saudi Arabia, the Crown Prince, they're not only doing that, they were doing the golf thing.
That's an important point to bring up.
They have Tiger Woods going, and the rest of that league, they're stepping into fighting. They're stepping, combat sports. They're stepping into a lot of avenues of kind of westernized entertainment. Mm-hmm. And what's the science behind that? I can't speak to it. I also can't count anybody's pockets. But I think where a lot of the dissension and a lot of the pushback, and the flinching reaction from the comedy community is you take a Bill Burr, right, who has been an advocate recently
for free speech.
Free speech and his political, socioeconomic views, this, that, and a third. Then he goes over there, he takes the bag, the relationships, the whatever, to go over there. And, okay, so then when you're looking at, say, Turkey, what was brother's name, the reporter? Turkey,
Jamal Khashoggi?
Al Jazeera. Mm-hmm. Turkey Al Jazeera. He's been in prison in Saudi Arabia for the last 7 years, right?
Mm.
For making tweets criticizing the government. And then they invited his family out to come say hi, give him a hug in the last 3 months. And then didn't tell his family, by the way, this is the last time you're going to be hugging this dude, so enjoy it. They left, and he got executed, which I think being reported right now is that executions in Saudi Arabia for a myriad of things is on the rise or steady or even climbing in a large degree. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what makes me flinch, not to take it purely off of comedy, because I'm going to hand it over to Samir here. But for me, it's like, okay, if we're trying to say, hey, comedy is healing art, why are we not going to other places? Okay, there's going to be restrictions now. Sure, you're going to have to find new. You know, comics are savvy. Is Dave Chappelle going to?
I hope the trans community is taking notes, right? Yeah, now you know how to put a muzzle on Chappelle.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just give him the bag. That's all you had to do the whole time.
Yeah. You know, he said that he could say things in Saudi Arabia he can't say here in the United States. And he's able to...
Which he signed a disclaimer before he went over there said, I mean, don't say this.
There's only like three disclaimers that you can't say, right? Mm-hmm. Right? You can't talk about the family, you can't talk about the Islamic tradition, and you can't talk about anything else regarding the government. That's it. And then after that, you can say whatever you want. So anything sexual, anything trans, he was able to just like, yeah, I can say more stuff there.
Chappelle's like, can I talk about? I mean,
But you know what America is? America is that clip of Tupac when he got up at like that university, the all black college or whatever, and there's a clip of Tupac going, they told me I can't cuss or nothing like that, but fuck that.
Yeah.
And went off and did his thing.
And also, I guess my take is, how much of this is also, right, politically speaking? Because America, we're so polarized right now into left and right, right? So Trump accepted what? A whole bunch of money. What was like $240 million as a gift this year? And so...
Exactly.
Yeah, right? And so there was like this double standard. So how could the comedian, these, you know, Chappelle and these, you know, Bill Burr, could they be taking these... money just to be like, no, yeah, we're restricted here anyways, so F that, we're gonna go do it over here and watch.
No, but it weakens the argument against Trump, right?
Well, yeah.
If we're gonna have a critique of Trump taking bags of money from Saudi, then our critique isn't as robust if now artists that we respect and admire are doing the same thing.
I disagree.
Okay.
I disagree. I hate to come on your podcast and disagree.
This is what it's for.
I respect you a lot, which is why I feel like I can talk this with you. 100%. I'm sick of being expected to play by rules that the opposing team's not playing by.
Mm.
And I'm sick of them being critiqued for playing by rules that the other team's not playing. We're losing. So, like, for me, the whole thing with, okay, there's like censorship. All right, if as a comic, you get booked for a corporate gig and they hey, please don't talk about this. Please don't talk about that. I get booked to go perform at Muslim organizations and they're like, hey, don't cuss. Don't talk about this. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to do that joke. Cool. I won't. No problem. I'm going over there to perform for your people. So a couple things. One, because you touched on like, oh, they have the golf thing over there, the UFC fighting over there. So that's what they call sports washing, right? Where it's like, oh, you want to wash away your atrocities by showing people, look how cool our country is. I would argue that America is the biggest culprit of that. For, like, Hollywood is the biggest whitewashing thing that's ever existed to hide the fact the United States is the most evil government in the world. And that is my opinion. Two, I think we are introducing what stand-up is to that side of the world. Hmm. And as an Arab who is a stand-up comedian, who has dreams of going over there performing on that side of the world, I think there's some rules you got to play by to start chipping away to be able to introduce the concept of stand-up comedy.
Absolutely.
And I think those people deserve it, right? I went and performed in Palestine, right? And I performed for our people there. And now Palestine and Saudi, very different situations, very different governments, very different places.
How did the audience...
Yeah, tell us about that.
It was the greatest achievement of my comedy career, and honestly, the greatest achievement of my personal life was to go over there and perform.
And in West Bank, or
also? I was across the West Bank, but you know what? I had to fly into Tel Aviv, and I had to go through Israeli checkpoints, and I had to smile and shake hands with IDF soldiers, and I had to play nice. Now, at one point, I didn't. I had an M16 pointed on my head, but I'm still here to talk about it. But the point is I had to go over there and give money to the Israeli government by flying to the Tel Aviv airport and going to the, you know, any dollar you spend in the West Bank, by the way, goes to the Israeli government. They use Israeli currency. It's not a, there's no Palestinian National Bank. It is all run by the Israelis. So for me, it's like, I knew that I had to pay somewhat of a moral tax to go bring comedy to people who I think deserved it and needed to be exposed to it. And I'm not willing to write off the people of Saudi Arabia and say that they don't deserve to get have these jokes. They don't deserve to get introduced to this culture. They don't deserve...
That's an interesting layer to it. Yeah.
No, because I guess for me, it's like, I see what he's saying and I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
And he's looking at it from the angle of also just the audience, the Saudi's people, as opposed to the government. Correct? And so when he's saying like these guys are bringing comedy into the world to those audience, I mean, it's hard to argue against that. That's because now you're bringing stand-up to the people. But often the case, I feel like in the West, what we do is we try to make everything into black and white. And things are not black and white, right? That's right. And so, oh, this government's evil and this government's good. I'm like, no, it's not. In fact, as Zaid said, American government is not the brightest government also. So in that category, if you're looking at just the audience, right, just bringing comedy into the world, then I would applaud Bill. I would applaud Kevin Hart from going and doing that, right? But the thing is, like, everyone's focused so much on, oh, the government. Also, our government's also complicit right now, right? We're not even focused on our own issue right now that we are supporting the genocide happening as well. So it's like
But going to the comedy store or Laugh Factory and doing a show in the United States is different. It would be the equivalent would be if Trump had organized a comedy show.
Trump had his inauguration and Snoop Dogg came out. Yeah. And Snoop Dogg was recorded saying Trump this, Trump that, woo woo, and then he caught flack. You know?
Yeah.
I think
Snoop Dogg fan, grew up in the 90s, West Coast dude, critiques are valid, right? I think it's okay to. The whole idea that, like, oh, who are we to have an opinion on this because we weren't offered? This is I hear this a lot. Like, oh, people. It's like, okay, true. I wasn't offered that. And maybe if I was offered, maybe I would be the first in line to grab the bag. Who knows? But right now, I'm sitting right here, and I have a right to have an opinion on what happened. And I have a right to have an opinion on Snoop, you know? And Snoop is, you know... So
let me ask you a question. What if right now, let's say, if one of the comedians, if Kevin, for example, gets the bag and then...
He doesn't need, by the way.
Yeah, he doesn't need
it. Kevin Hart's the only one that pissed me off because I'm just like, you don't have.
Well, I mean,
you don't need this.
What was it really for?
Right, but like, if one of these guys gets the bag and donate it to any like humanitarian, groups or any organization, would that make the media be like, it was worth it? Or
It's a good question.
Or is it going to be like, no, you still did that. You still went, perform for this evil dictator. No, I think that's a good dictator. Question. Are they, you know what I mean?
I think what's interesting about this, and I love all the perspectives, by the way. So no, don't say we're getting to know each other. I love that you're bringing that. Is that one of the things that we're trying to do, I think, in this podcast, as my own curiosity, is how morals play out differently in the artistic community amongst comedians versus on like the academic side, right? And I'll be the first to admit that in art and in this world, there's a good amount of moralizing that happens for sure, right? And I think my academic, you know, our academic colleagues and friends of the podcast, you know, if we're being honest, we admit that there's a lot of judgment, and it's big in the undergraduate community. It's a lot of virtue signaling, all the stuff that some of it is stuff that the right wing accuses the left wing of, and we're guilty of, right? There is this, like, you know, like, what do you do? Do you know, what are your pronouns? Do you do a land acknowledgement? What's your, you know, identity? Like, there's a lot of that stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And at times it puts us in the position of a little bit of a snobby position of, like, you know, Puritan criteria, pointing fingers and things like that. And there is a more easy humility amongst comedians. I was hanging out last night at Second City at your show, Samir, and I'm not going to name names. We were talking about the same issue with a few comedians, and you know, I was sharing the same point of view that I shared today. And one of the comics was like, "Oh, I'd definitely take it. I would definitely, like, you know, like, I would, you know, it's like, you know." And now I was like, "But hold on, but let's talk about it. Like, why? Like, I'm not saying you're wrong or I'm right necessarily, but I want to know." And I think what I've heard, even in this conversation, is that it's more complicated. There's more to it than Kevin Hart just, "I'm going to fucking take the bag." I'm sure they had conversations. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Chappelle's a smart dude. These are some of the smartest, most sophisticated comedians. I'm sure they had a thought process to it.
Yeah, I have Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's name in my phone. I can text him. He's taking over westernized entertainment. There was a battle a couple years ago between Kendrick and Drake, right? Yeah. Maybe you heard about it, right? Now, at
tell
one
Samir.
Point,
he doesn't know. He's new to America.
Who's Drake?
It was American black guys. One of them was Canadian, so nah. But but there was at one point in time. Who's buddy from North Carolina? J. Cole, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Now, if you know hip hop, you know it's a gladiator sport, right? Everybody, if you're serious about the craft, I'm number one. I'm better than you. My car's better than you. My girl's better than your girl. My this and my that. And J. Cole was one of those. I'm the top rapper, dead or alive. This is that and the third. And when it was time to battle, he tipped his hat and he ducked out the door. Which means from here on out, bro, do your music, but don't have passion in your voice.
Yeah.
And don't come out your face to say, "I'm the greatest rapper," because you had that moment, you ducked the smoke, right? Mm. When it comes to Bill Burr in particular, and this is purely my perspective.
Now, well, why not Ann Chappelle? Bill Burr in particular?
Because, I'm getting to that part. Bill Burr in particular, right? I'm not counting his pockets. Why did he take the bag? Is it for his daughter's future? Is it for giving back to the community? Is it for whatever? All I know is that at certain points in history, and recent history, I can recall Bill Burr being passionate about freedom of speech, women's rights, this, that, and the, you know, his skew. You can go back and check it. I'm not going to quote him, right? So then to turn around, and again, I mean, am I well versed in Saudi Arabian socioeconomics? No. But did Turkey Al Jazeera get executed for tweets?
Or Jamal Khashoggi? Yeah.
Or Khashoggi?
Yeah.
Right? From what I heard. Yeah. And again, it gets convoluted. How close is that tied to the royal family? What's going on over there? And Zayd made an excellent, excellent point, in my opinion, which was, and still is, how I'm looking at it. Comedy, I am the greatest fan of stand-up comedy in general. If I had never touched this stuff, I was always a fan. And introducing that to other places, every single time. Every single time, do it. Because it is freedom of speech at a very high level. Which it's also humor, which no matter what walk of life, culture, age, laughing feels good. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that comes with being a human. You don't have to teach a baby how to laugh, cry, or fight, or be hungry. It just comes with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So being able to introduce that, I think is very important. But I think Bill Burr gets a lot of the kickback because he was out there with his whole chest out, saying these are my beliefs, right? Yeah, and you go over there and supposedly, from an English westernized perspective, Saudi Arabia isn't falling in line with the beliefs that Bill Burr was championing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he signed his name on the dotted line and went over there, which I don't necessarily have a problem with, but just don't say, you know.
And I think that's... Yeah,
don't say...
Just say you got a price.
Yeah, just say.
I was going to say, I think a couple things. One, what Samir said about this not being a black and white issue is super important. And that's why, you know, when I engage with you guys on this, like, I'm telling you how I feel and I'm telling you I'm right.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing.
I love, that's been our MO.
Yeah.
And we're working it out.
We'll say that.
Yeah.
And from what I know about you, man, is like, you, like I said, you've been one of those people who's been, on, in my opinion, on the right side of a lot of the issues happening in the world over the last several years, which is why, like, when you make points about why you're disappointed in seeing Bill Burr dish buck over there, totally valid. That's what I say. Yeah. I'm not right. I tell you how I feel, but how you feel is also exceptionally valid and very fair. One thing I want to call out, and this is, again, this is a privileged position to be in and to make fun of, but like, where's all this outrage when these people take money to go perform at Zionist owned clubs? Where's all the outrage when these people take money to go perform, you know, for evil corporations that we have here? Like, we don't criticize them the same way.
It's selective criticism.
So my whole point is, like, if we want to have this standard of what it means of who you take your money from and where you go perform and who you perform for, let's have a fucking standard. But don't change it because it's an Arab country.
But other examples, like, I'm not familiar with the Zionist clubs, but other, you know, examples of, because the list was long. I mean, even the three that you mentioned, Samir, like, to go and say, come, but don't talk about religion, politics, or the royal, that's a lot. That's a three chunk. But there's actually even a longer list. Are there analogous examples of clubs that might be, you know, in cahoots with Israel or that have made this kind of deal? Because it was a very explicit, come, sign your name, don't talk about, you know, that's a very explicit, like,
yeah.
It's a little bit, I haven't, you know, I can see the corporate gig or someone gets booked for, I don't know, a bachelor party. Hey, but it seems like the deal is heavy to say, don't talk about religion, politics, war. I mean, you know, like, there's something.
I'll say this, that I at least respect Saudi for being straight up about what you're not allowed to talk about. Whereas in the United States, I think we are just a lot more muddy and we'll just blackball you and not tell you the rules of the game before you play.
To go back what you were just saying, though. We were talking about it.
That's an interesting point. I'm in Northwestern, and that shit has been topic of the day.
Just understand, but everybody knows that if it bleeds, it leads. Stories sell. In all of our professions, whether it's academic or entertainment, the best story wins. And right now, I'm saying this with all due respect, right now, what's happening between Gaza and Israel is the story of the day, because we were teasing Samir earlier before we started rolling that the genocide happening in his country is 22 years old.
Look at the morals of this podcast.
No, we're not batting an eye. We stopped talking about it and he's our friend. We made a couple of jokes and we moved on.
he goes, yeah, I was like, this is genocide of Sudan. He's like, yeah, man. I was like, how long has that been going on? He's like, 2003. I was like, y'all, why are we talking about it? Together. We're not doing anything.
Old news. The Assyrian genocide has barely ever been talked about. And go down the list, and I'm not smart enough to know the list. But if it bleeds, it leads.
You want to hear the list? You got to go to Second City on Fridays and catch him. He gives you the list.
I mean, we're talking about it. We're talking about it right now. We're barely talking about Russia, Ukraine. Human beings don't have the bandwidth to take in every single thing that's going on, and there is always, will always be something going on after the Kirk shooting, right?
Yeah.
How many different church and or school pow-pows has there been? We don't have the bandwidth to talk about it right now. What we do have the bandwidth to talk about is, how did he disassemble that rifle and sneak it down his pants and jump off the roof? He was a patsy.
He must because have been Republican.
That's but we don't have time to talk about a pow-powing in a South Carolina church that happened two, 3 days later. You know what I mean? It's the bandwidth.
It's the onslaught.
Which when it gets painted, if I stop and kind of slow things down and look at it, I'm like, this narrative is getting painted. I'm getting kept on the edge of my seat for this. And why? What's getting slipped by the goalie while you're, hey, look at this. All right, find the Red Queen.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's right there. Wah. Give me your money, sucker. You know what I mean? That's what I'm worried about.
I think, this is interesting, because I think, Zaid, you had a good point, too. Like, the first point you mentioned was, you know, with the comic, one of the things about being a comedian is, being looked upon in a particular way, like, oh, you're on the right side of history, so you are restricted to saying certain things, which is not where you want to be as a comedian. You want to be just free to kind of say whatever you want, right? Like, for example, a little too long ago, Andrew Schultz was that guy, but then eventually he started leaning more towards the right, and now he's getting a lot of backlash about it, but he was in that phase where he's free to say whatever he wants, right? Mm-hmm. So then with Bill, what's happening recently, he's on the right side of history. This could be a chance for him to be like, hey, guys, I am on whatever the money is, okay? Yeah, there are certain beliefs I have. I still believe this about women and this and that, but there's more to it than just when it comes to money, why me doing this. I'm still looking out for Bill, right? So there's like that, maybe there's that freedom for a comic to kind of just be like, no, I don't want to be in that circle where everyone now got to say the right thing every single time.
Is this still going on? Is the festival still happening?
It's like a few more days, I think.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure about the timeline of it.
Yeah, but yeah.
I like what you're saying. Keep going with this point.
But that could also be a possibility, right? Because you don't, like, as a comedian, when you're kind of painted this image of only saying the right thing, now the standards become hard, because the moment you say one wrong thing, the whole media, the whole ego is just on your back, just pushing you and throwing. You know what I'm saying? So maybe this is a way for them to be like, yo, I'm a comedian. I'm going to challenge views. I'm going to do things that you may dislike and things that you may actually like. So give me that freedom. So that could be a reason why they did that.
You mean like, are you saying that there's a scenario in which, I mean, I haven't heard about any of the actual sets. I don't know if you guys have read about any of it.
Dave Chappelle fucking crushed. He crushed. And I was actually just talking to someone over in the Gulf, and she was telling me about like what the show was like and what he did and how he had a lot of criticisms for Israel. He went off about that. He was talking like he crushed his show. Go back to your point.
No, that's interesting. I was thinking, if you were saying like, if there's a scenario in which, you know, it's like a Trojan horse situation. Are they signing it and then getting there and then still using their storytelling and their art form challenge power, but maybe it's subversive. And there's a long history of subversion in the region, right? And sometimes you got, but I'm not sure that's what it is. But if Chappelle did that and there was some subversion going on and playing with the lines, that would be very notable, and I think will change how I feel about it. If Bill Burr goes there and figures out a way, if he's clever enough to figure out a way to talk his shit and still, you know, not get right. If he can figure that out and touch a lot of people's minds and hearts.
By the way, all the comics, every single one of them, that's like, this is bogus. If and when this gets released on Netflix, everybody's watching.
Everybody's watching.
I'm gonna give Netflix that click. I can't wait for research.
Purely
for observational research.
I do want to say this. Bill Burr is my favorite comedian.
He's up there for me.
Bill Burr's like, there's a lot of comedians that maybe fall in love with comedy. Early Kevin Hart got me. But what I'm talking about when I started writing stand-up, the comedian that I watched was Bill Burr. And it's still who I watch.
Yeah.
So I do not think that the task is too tall for Bill Burr to have been like, "I'm taking this money and I'm still gonna do my thing. I just gotta find a way around."
It's gotta find
a way
around.
By the way, after what he did in Philly, this is a walk in the park.
Yeah, he went to Philly and he cussed out the audience.
Philly
got a standing ovation.
Shut out Philly, boy.
So that totally could have been his plan, and I think he's creative enough to be like, "All right, you told me I can't talk about this. I'm still gonna talk about it, just under different guys." But if Bill Burr went there for Bill to take his bag, I'm also like,
At the
end of the day, this is a business.
Yep.
And I think Bill Burr, more than just free speech, what he's been on is like, I'm a comedian. I'm not a reporter. Mm. I'm not a philosopher. I don't write books. Don't follow me for my thoughts and my views. Follow me for my jokes.
Are we putting too much on comedians? Are we roganizing comedians? Is it just to be funny? Are we not modern day philosophers? We're just people telling jokes, laugh.
I hate this concept of like comedians are modern day philosophers and comedians are the ones who have to like bring. No, we make a mockery of what happens around us, and we relate to people around us, and we are a communal gathering. That is what comedy is. We're a communal gathering. And part of it is telling the truth and finding a way to tell the truth and tell stories. But doing so as a, I don't know, modern day philosophers, I think is a cop out to modern day philosophers. And Bill Burr was on this when he was getting asked really tough questions from journalists about some, I forget what the topic was. It was about Elon Musk. Mm. And they were like, you know, do you think that Elon is evil? And he goes, what do you think? You're the journalist. You write it. Don't tell me. They're like, well, they say, you know, comedians are modern day truth tellers. He's like, that's a cop out. Do your job. I'm doing mine. I tell jokes and I write funny things down. Mm. But you have to do your job so I can do mine.
Yeah.
Interesting. And I think that's a different way of looking at it.
It's interesting because I think I agree with him 100%. That we hold comedians like two high standards to solve like today's problems. But at the same time too, when you see a comedian talk about issues that you want light on, then immediately you also start to be like, I like that comedian because he's talking about the issues that affect me, right? So then there's this biases that you may have that standard, but then you have that standard until the comedian talks about a problem that you have in particular. Suddenly that comedian become like, this guy is spreading, you know, he's spreading news on and talking. Like, for example, for me, like Hasan Minhaj, right? Early on when Hasan Minhaj wasn't talking about the Gaza situation, the genocide in Gaza, everyone was like, Hasan Minhaj, you should be talking about this and that, right? And then people were like, hey, how do you feel about Hasan Minhaj? I'm like, same way I felt about Hasan Minhaj a year ago. He's a funny guy. Nothing really changed. And then a little later on, he's the only comedian that started talking about like Sudan. Right? And suddenly I'm like, man, yeah, he's doing, I love Hasan. He should be doing that more. More comedians should also be talking about this. Right? Cause there's a bias. I'm like, Hasan is talking about problems that are a little more centered towards me. So I'm now like, I see him in a different light than other comedians. Right? But at the same time, it's like, I do understand that we can't hold comedians on these standards where there should be, it's not their job to solve any of these issues. It's their job is just to tell ha ha ha's and that's about it. Right? But
I disagree totally. Because you guys don't do that. So I this is a narrative. I'm just going to do now. This is the outsider telling you guys something I'm hearing.
I want to hear this.
Because this is a little bit of a cop. It's like even the Bill, and I love Bill Burr.
Yeah.
I think maybe the interview you're talking about was when he was on NPR with Terry Gross, maybe. But I've heard him make that point. I've heard Neil Brennan make this point. He's like, you know, everyone's looking to the comedians for knowledge. Like, you're looking to the clowns for guidance in society. I hear that. I hear it's a little bit of a deflection because I've been around you guys long enough now, right? That it's not just the ha ha ha's. When I saw you, Zay, performing at Second City, you were educating people. Yes, you were entertaining people. It was a communal gathering. Mike, Samir, same with you guys. You guys are there's a concept from an old Italian rogue philosopher, Antonio Gramsci, right, called organic intellectuals, street intellectuals. You know, even Marxist philosophy was based on this idea that, you know, layman, you don't have to be a philosopher or an academic or an elite to have views that are substantive and important for the rest. I think comedians, this is part of my attraction to this whole art form, not all of them, and you guys, off the camera, off the mic, you guys know how I feel about a lot of other comedians. I don't feel this way about everyone. I don't think everyone. I think it's a very big umbrella. Yeah, right. And that's part of what I love about it, because I can go one night at the Laugh Factory, I can hear about, you know, some deep commentary about Gaza, and then the next act can be about, you know, eating ass. Right? So there's something inclusive and big about it, but I think there is something deep. That's just my take. Yeah. And again, maybe that's me being at the university, and this is how I see it. I respect what all of you have said. It's given me a lot to think about.
Yeah.
If we can, I want to hear a little bit about Zay. You're on tour, man. This is, yeah. I mean, shit. What's going on? Like, how? You're from here. You live here in Chicago, mm-hmm. but you're on tour now. Can you share a little bit with our viewers and listeners what's going on and what's on the horizon?
Yeah. So I do want to touch on the topic you just talked about, but I'll do that after I make a little plug.
I'll try to get the last word in.
So I do these mini tours about once a year, mm-hmm. sometimes twice a year, where everything I do is very DIY now. I've been very fortunate enough to build a little bit of a following on Instagram and social media and things like that. But I don't have necessarily the career success that aligns with it, and I don't have the industry connects where mm-hmm. I can go headline clubs. I don't have a manager. I don't have an agent. So, but I want to be working on my hour because I know it's special. I know it's really good. And mm-hmm. when I hit that threshold of my career where it makes sense for me to do a special, mm-hmm. I want to have it in my back pocket, mm-hmm. ready to go, clean, ready. Mm-hmm. So I do these little mini tours at least once, twice a year. So that mm-hmm. way I can work on this hour, refine it, get comfortable with that on stage. And the hour is called Identity Crisis. Mm-hmm. And the hour is, you know, I'm half Arab, I'm half white. My mom was born and raised in the United States. My dad was born and raised in Syria. My mom's a revert to Islam. I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, very redneck area, very, you know, Republican area. Mm-hmm. And that identity crisis stems from a few things. One, that half white, half Arab identity, never feeling fully accepted by either side, always mm-hmm. trying to navigate what that means. Being a Muslim in the United States, where I went through periods where I wasn't religious at all, and then I became religious. Mm. And then my own mental health struggles that I've been going through my entire life, mm. you know, where as I got older, I started looking back and be like, wow, I really did struggle with a lot of depression and anxiety mm. as a kid, and that stayed with me. So all that feeds into this story of identity crisis, and basically it's the story of me coming to terms with who I am and falling, you know, being able to love myself for who I am mm. and be proud of it. It's a very celebratory story about my dad and my upbringing, my mom and her role, and also some of the really cool things I'm able to do in stand-up. So that's Identity Crisis. That's my hour. That's what I'm working on, and so I like to take it around. So this year, in October, next weekend, I'll be in New York. I'll be performing in Brooklyn, then Clifton, New Jersey the next day. A couple weeks later, I'm going to Miami, Florida to do a show out there that's actually a fundraiser for Palestine. Okay. All profits from that show are going to Palestine. And then I'm going to Detroit, Michigan. In November, and then December going to Cleveland, Ohio.
So that's what's beautiful, up, man. Beautiful. How do people find you, come to your shows, find your shows? What's the easiest
Instagram's
way?
Instagram's the best way, zay.fozy. Give me a follow, subscribe to my channel, and then also sign up for my mailing list. I send out all the
information. I'm on your mailing list, bro. I'm seeing your things. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I send out all the information on my mailing list. The one thing I do want to say in response to what you were talking about is I do feel like I have a responsibility to speak truth to power. I do feel like I have a responsibility to talk about where I come from and who I am.
Tell this guy, man.
But but not because I'm a comedian. Mm. It's because I'm a Muslim. Mm. And it's because that I'm an Arab. And before anything else in my life, I'm Muslim and I'm Arab. Mm. Comedian's like the third or fourth thing, mm-hmm. right? And I believe that because I'm a religious man, if I'm given a gift, and I'm given an opportunity to speak on a microphone in front of an audience and have a platform, no matter how big it is, I have a responsibility to speak up for my people, our stories, and tell our truth. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I speak the way I speak, and that's why I carry that responsibility. And I would not put that level of responsibility on anybody else who doesn't necessarily feel it. But that's my, and I'm not saying,
you're speaking for yourself, yeah.
But that is where my truth to power speaking comes from.
And as you know, I've only seen you once, and it was 100% visible and noticeable, and that's what made me, I'm gonna follow this guy, and I'm excited to see it.
Please pay attention to him. It's an experience to see this brother perform. Always has passion, always educated, more importantly very funny. With that, if you guys have made it this far, please make sure you like, share, subscribe, comment. We talked about too much for you guys to hold your comments to yourselves. We want to see engagement at the bottom. Please let us know what you're thinking, how you're feeling. This is PCWB, Professor and a Comedian, walking to a bar. I am your co-host, Mike Knight.
What's up, guys? It's Sapere Vakil, and welcome back to Season 2.
And I am your co-host, Samir. And thank you again, Zayd Fozy, for being part of the show.
Thanks a lot. All right, cool.